traveler. Browse my fine potions, for this is my potion shop.
I am the finest potion seller in all the lands. Be wary, traveler. The roads are perilous ahead.
Mayhaps you want one of my potions for your venture.
I can offer you my finest CJLO 1690 AM potion, if you have the coin. Fare thee well, traveler.
For CJLO News, I'm Donald Roberge. The City of Montreal will be holding public consultations for a proposed plan to create a 24-hour nightlife district downtown, as well as neighborhoods around the city dedicated to after-hours activities. The meetings, to be held over the next 2 months, will give businesses, organizations, and the public an opportunity to provide their opinions and suggestions before the policy is finalized towards the end of the summer. Though specific neighborhoods have not yet been confirmed, the city wants to assure that the industries who would profit from the city's nightlife will be in harmony with the ever-growing number of residences found among bars, dance halls, and theater venues. The city believes that keeping certain businesses open for 24 hours has the potential to inject more than $600 million into the local economy while keeping the city culturally vibrant. McGill University has announced that it is working on a plan to reopen Moisey Hall, a theater in its arts building that was closed 2 weeks ago due to the discovery of asbestos. The 306-seat venue that was built in the 1920s is regularly used by the school's English department as well as for rentals and stage productions. Yet dust samples, which were collected from suspicious-looking debris on January 16th, led to air quality tests that came back positive for the toxic fiber. Adjoining rooms to the theater, including the basement, were also closed as a precaution, though the rest of the building remains open. Federal Immigration Minister Mark Miller announced changes to the International Student Visa Program this week. Katie Brady has more.
Three principal measures. One, a temporary 2-year cap on new international.
During the Liberal cabinet retreat in Montreal this week, Minister Miller announced cuts to the International Student Visa Program, which the Trudeau government says is to help alleviate the housing crisis. For 2024, the cap is expected to result in foreign student visas being slashed by about a third. The bulk of the cuts will impact provinces like BC and Ontario, who have the highest number of international students already. For now, it seems Quebec, which has comparatively fewer foreign students, will be allowed to take in more pupils under the changes, but many are still wary of the shakeup. Vivian Albuquerque is an immigration lawyer in Montreal. She studied as an international student at Concordia University.
And for the vulnerability of the spouse in Canada, I mean, if you're coming to Canada in order to advance your career and then go back home and then your spouse needs to stay home and take care of the kids, you have to think about it twice. It's still not clear, and that's the part that it's really concerning me, because the government makes those announcements and it seems to be able to satisfy specific part of the Canadian population and leaves international students in limbo.
The announcement has added to the immigration debate at home this week. Premier Legault has made several public remarks about needing to curb immigration due to strain on the system. Quebec Solidaire immigration critic Guillaume Cliche-Rivard told CJLO Quebec's housing crisis isn't caused by newcomers, and he wants to see meaningful analysis done to find solutions to Quebec's immigration question.
They are failing to this day to tell us who they would reduce, what category, and how they would do it. And I would request to those people that are requesting and are putting forward measures to reduce permanent and temporary immigrations to directly be more detailed and more specific and to tell us, if that's your position, can you please explain to Quebecers what's that going to mean, and how many of them do you feel are too many, and what field is this international students that you're going to cut? Is it workers that are in the health system? Is it workers in the public sphere?
For the full interview with Guillaume Cliche-Rivard, find CJLO's weekly news roundup on Spotify. In Montreal for CJLO, I'm Katie Brady.
For more, visit CJLO 1690 AM podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Welcome in to the Starting Rotation. I'm your host, Jacob Snyder, and I'm joined today by a special guest. Dylan, welcome in.
Thank you very much, Jay. I'm happy to be here. What's going on?
Well, Dylan, I was actually going to ask you the same question. How are your teams doing recently?
Well, if you would have asked me how am I doing, I would have told you, honestly, not that great. You know, every team I vote for is losing. It's been a bad last couple months, to be honest.
Oh, well, speaking of those teams, one of them in particular, the Montreal Canadiens, we need to kind of deep dive into that to start off the show. I know it's been a while, but the best place to start Montreal is obviously hockey. So looking at the last month, I just looked at the wins and losses, and I was actually surprised. A few more losses than wins, of course, but they were near 500. You seem to take a bit of issue with their play, though.
Yeah, like it might look like a 500 team on paper, but it certainly feels like they're worse. Before I start bashing them, I just want to shout out our captain, Nick Suzuki, who will be our only All-Star this year. This weekend is going to be NHL All-Star, and he will be representing the St. Flannel. But if we're looking at the team, we've lost four of the last five games. We still have three goalies. We still haven't made any trades. The trade deadline's coming up. The team, like, whether it be, it's definitely management, they need to make a decision right now whether or not we're going to make some trades and make a push for the playoffs, because we're almost last in the conference, but the conference bottom tier of the conference is pretty weak. We still have a shot at playoffs. Or do they want to decide to shoot the season in the garbage, tank, get some good draft picks, make some trades to get some people? I don't know what they need to do. Like, they need to make that decision in the upcoming weeks, because right now it just feels like nothing's happening. It's a constant cycle of, like, of being mid, you know?
Okay, let's go back to that, though. Let's go to Fantasyland for a second. Pretend you are the GM. As you said, the trade deadline is coming up. What would you do? Because I have my own opinion on what direction they should go. I'm all for tanking and rebuilding. Just the play I've seen, it feels like there's a couple holes on the roster that you can't just tape over. But I'm not a fan. I'm just an outside observer. As a fan, let's play fantasy GM for a sec. What would you do?
Well, I think number one on the list, you got to figure out this goalie situation. We got three goalies in the lineup right now. Even our head coach, beginning of the season, they asked him, like, why are you rotating three guys? And he said he hinted at the fact that, like, it's not even his decision, you know? It's coming from upper management. So we need to figure out what we're doing with these three goalies. If it was me, I would trade Jake Allen, because right now we have Jake Allen, who's a known veteran in this league, Samuel Montembeau, who in my eyes is the number one goalie at the moment, and he's young. He's still like 25 years old, I think. And then we got Caden Primo, who's another young guy who's been playing, you know, the goalies have been playing decent, I would say, like, for the team that they have around them, the defense they have around them. So at this point, I would trade the oldest guy, Jake Allen, and get some sort of return, whether that be picks or another young guy. Like, I don't really mind. And I say Jake Allen just because, mostly because of the age. Like, we're a team in development. Like, there's no more developing this guy. He's not a number one either, in my opinion. So we just need to get him out of there. And, like, we're using a roster spot for a third goalie. You know, not many teams do that.
I was going to say, I don't notice that on the Red Wings when I watch. I thought that was a unique situation, but I'm not super well versed on hockey. Well, I didn't know for sure.
Usually when they do that, it's because they're trying to showcase the talent of somebody that they want to have traded, you know? Like, they've thrown, like, I know I'm going to bash Allen, but the last couple weeks, he hasn't even been the problem. Like, he's actually had some decent games with no help from the defense. So when they throw him in against a team like Colorado or something, who fans think we have no chance of winning, it's because they want to show that this guy can take on a lot of shots. Maybe he'll take in four goals, but if he gets 30 saves on that, you know, teams will think, well, maybe this guy can bring some value as a backup.
I was going to say, I was extremely impressed by Allen's performance in Pittsburgh. I really felt like your defense let Pittsburgh kind of go through and skate up the ice, get their shots off. I mean, Pittsburgh, an extremely aggressive hockey team with the shooting, but they got so many shots off, and I felt like Allen was all over the ice. I understand he let in two, and, you know, the eventual one that lost it for them in overtime. I'm surprised you're not more concerned about Montembeau.
Well, the thing about Montembeau is he's very young, right? Like, he's 25. So if he has, like, obviously there was a 9-goal game last week.
That's the one that stuck in my mind.
I don't really blame him as much as I do the defense. Like, our defense has been incredibly weak, like, apart from, like, I don't know, even Savard has been struggling recently, who he's looked at as a leader in the locker room and all that. So that's why I'm not as concerned with Montauban. Montauban just won the World Championships this summer as the starting goalie. Like, he's going to have ups and downs, especially when the team around you is really, really young. And, like, we could start looking at the defense also. I got some issues with some of the players there, but I don't know if you want to get into
that. No, we still have a bit of time before the ad break. I was going to say, your offense seems to click each game. I understand they've had a couple of low-scoring ones, but I always like the chances. Of course, on the power plays, we'd like to see more shots. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a common theme. But the defense, I don't even know what to say about it. It feels like they just let other teams skate.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like you said, the offense has been... Well, the offense started off really struggling beginning of the season. Now our power play has picked up a little bit. The defensive guys, I'm not sure if they still are, but they were number one, actually, in the NHL in defensive goals. But that's not why you're getting paid. Like, you're getting paid to... take like
to protect away, the to net, protect the goalie. The
goals. And we just got guys out there, like, I'm thinking about Jordan Harris. Like, I think he's completely useless. I don't know why we keep playing him instead of other players. Like, he looks lost on the ice. He takes penalties, so many turnovers. When you got, like, your top two center on the ice committing turnovers in front of the net, like, it's... can't stop everything as a goalie, you know.
But okay, we're all seeing that. It's easy to recognize. Is that a management issue? Is that the GM saying, okay, play this guy so he's trade bait for later on? Like, does the coach need to attack this differently? Why is this happening?
I don't know, because they're not being really, I don't find they're being that clear about it in the media until the goalie situation a couple weeks ago. Kent Hughes, our GM, had a press conference. And he said it was finally his decision to have three goalies. So that's cool. We know it's not the coaching, but... then how many decisions does the coach do? Like, Martin St. Louis, is he the one responsible for having Jordan Harris make a bunch of turnovers and not sitting out? Is he responsible for Michael Pezzetta playing a minute 55 of ice time and 2 minutes of that is in the penalty box? Like, how are you developing guys if you got trash players on the ice, or if you got guys that actually seem like they want to play, but you don't play them on the ice? Like, is it Martin's decision? Is it Kent Hughes? Like, I have no idea. I think they need more clarity in the media. Martin needs to clarify more things.
You'd like that, because I've been talking to a few Canadian fans, and actually even my Uber driver on the way to school today brought up the Canadians. Seems like there's a lot of frustration surrounding this team. What you just said, a clear direction. We seem to go over and over. If you go back on the other starting rotation shows, we were still talking about which direction this team should go. With the trade deadline coming up, it really feels like they need to make a decision soon. I don't necessarily see the benefit. I understand upping, you know, if Allen has a crazy game, okay, his trade value might be higher. But I don't understand just continuing on this path of mediocrity. Do you really want to get into the playoffs as, like, the last seed?
Well, if we do get in the playoffs as the last seed, we've shown that we can still go to the finals. When we went to that in the finals 2021, we were actually the last seed. If we would have been in any other division, we wouldn't have even made the playoffs. NHL playoffs, anything can happen, so I'm good if we make it as the last seed, but, like, as long as we develop the young guys, like, I don't want the trade deadline to pass and we still have Jake Allen and we didn't do anything, you know?
Oh, could you imagine if they still had three goalies, what the reaction will be? No,
that would be all. I mean, I don't know what they're doing if that's the decision they take.
Now, to move on to another team, or up against it here at the ad break, I've been extremely impressed this year, and I know people, you know, this name's going to sting a little bit, the Boston team, the Bruins. I mean, flying up and down the ice, good goal play. I've actually watched them twice play against the Red Wings. Are they the ones to win it all, or do you have another one in mind?
Well, they're definitely one of the favorites, definitely the favorite in the East, as they have been over the last, like, decade or so. They've, you know, great, or I hate them so much, but great organization, you know, I can't take that away from them. They have been to the Stanley Cup finals more often in the 21st century than the Canadians have. They've actually won cups, and, you know, that culture is still there. They have a solid core players that I absolutely hate. And
exactly, yeah.
Most of the reason why I hate them is because they always beat us, man. They got, even like Brad Marchand, I hate him so much, but I can't say anything because these guys are constantly kicking our butts, you know?
I was so shocked by the rivalry when I came here. I didn't know it was that deep. like back home, you know, for those who don't know, I live in Michigan, right? So for us, the big rivalry, well, live right beside Michigan, excuse me. The big rivalry is between the Detroit Red Wings and Toronto Maple Leafs. And I come here and, you know, I've known about this hockey team for a long time, the Montreal Canadiens. I've just never really followed them. Didn't know who the main rival was. And very, very quickly, you guys, all you fans, made it so clear it was Boston. Like, that seems to be the number one team you guys have an issue with.
Yeah, well, I would say number one is still Toronto at the end of the day because it's Anglophone, Montreal's Francophone. But Boston is right up there. And some years, Boston has been number one. It depends, you know, like, if the Leafs are trash. Like, there was a couple of years in a row where the Leafs were really bad, so I didn't really mind as much playing Tampa Bay. But Boston is always good, and every time you play them, it feels like they want to hit you in the face, and, like, you know, they want to make you bleed and all that, and they play dirty, or at least they used to play dirty. Everybody remembers the Zdeno Chara hit on Pacioretty, and, like, that's where the hatred comes from. And also, I'm pretty sure, like, I wasn't around then, but in the 70s, like, the Habs were winning everything, and some Montrealers started voting for Boston because they wanted a new team, and then that caused rivalries within the province. Like, it's a whole history.
Oh, that's terrible. I didn't know it ran that deep. I'd actually like to explore that at some point. We're up against it here, but when we come back, we'll be discussing the NFL, those conference championships. It's going to be a tough segment for me with my Lions falling apart, but we'll see if I make it through.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
All right, gang, let's really nail it this time. Here we go.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema? Bum.
We'll tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday from 8 to 9 a.m.
Only on CJLO 1690 a.m. in Montreal with your hosts, Remy
and Danny.
This is how we do it. Da, 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 da. Hey, I never asked you.
Yeah.
You like guacamole? Ah! Run! Oh, God! Run!
At Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry, or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from John Tolon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinema Public for a lively cinema.
And we're back. Welcome back to the starting rotation. Jacob Snyder here with Dylan Adams. So, Dylan, I've been avoiding doing this. I've been avoiding thinking about these games, but it's time to dive into the NFL Conference Championships. Obviously, we weren't on air right after like we usually are to discuss it, so this is the first time we're going over them. Let's start with the Ravens and Chiefs. Watching that game, it just feels like the Ravens blew an opportunity. We've seen the Chiefs play in the playoffs for how many years and play at such a higher level than they showed in that game, but they still won.
Yeah, well, a great way to look at the Chiefs is by comparing them, in my opinion, to all those Patriot dynasties, especially at the end of Tom Brady's career. You know, you had every end of season, ESPN, Fox Sports, all these analysts would be saying, like, oh, well, this is the end of Brady and Belichick. They have no receivers. The defense is the only thing keeping them up. Brady's not even fully healthy. They're definitely not going to make a run in the playoffs. And then what would happen? They go to the playoffs. They go to the Super Bowl. They win. This is exactly what's happening with the Kansas City Chiefs. All of this year, everybody was saying receivers can't catch. They can't do this. Patrick Mahomes has no help. The defense is the only thing helping them out. And now here in the playoffs, they've looked like a Super Bowl team that they actually are.
They look like a juggernaut again. But the funny thing is, those things were happening, though.
Yeah.
Throughout the regular season, they were dropping passes. That wasn't, you know, the wrong opinion to have. I was at the game against Detroit to open the season, right through Tony's hands into Brian Branches, who ran it back. But these receivers are catching the ball. Rashid Rice is looking like Jerry Rice out there.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce, who looked absolutely cooked near the end of the regular season, is back to full form. How do they keep doing this?
Well, they got a lot of experience now, and their coach as well, Andy Reid, has been to I don't know how many conference championships, whether that be with the Eagles or even with the Chiefs. Like, They've been to the conference championship every year in Pat Mahomes' career. Like, to think about the fact that this was the first year where Pat Mahomes is playing a road playoff game is insane. And that's really what's helping them. It's the experience. Like, the Ravens don't really have that much playoff experience. They lose in the first two rounds every season. The Chiefs also played the Dolphins, who, now we can get into that. The Dolphins are god-awful in the playoffs every
year. Tough watch.
And now they're going against, they just beat, yeah, exactly, the Ravens. I just said it, so... It's experience. Like, that's what it comes down to, in my opinion. The playoffs matter more than the season. The guys step up when they need to.
But not to take credit away from the Chiefs, but again, they only scored 17 points. So I am going to take a tiny bit away here and look over to the Ravens. Was this more about KC imposing their will or Baltimore falling short again in the playoffs, especially Lamar?
Yeah, well, we can definitely touch on Lamar, or is it their offensive coordinator's fault? Because there's a lot of plays where if you press pause on the tape, you know, you see Lamar just sitting in the pocket waiting to throw the ball, when any other circumstance, he would have ran for like 20 yards. So is that the coach telling him today you're going to pass more, or is that Lamar just overthinking it then?
Getting away from the run, too, that was a massive mistake. That's a team that lived and died by running the football. They'd have games well over 200 yards rushing. And like you said, against KC, they seemed determined to put him back in the pocket, which, I mean, Flowers had a good game, obviously fumbled going in the end zone to completely destroy it. But beyond that, I wasn't very impressed by the receivers. Obviously, Andrews, first game back since being injured, so you couldn't expect as much from him. But even like Isaiah Likely, who had performed several times throughout the regular season with massive games, big touchdowns, like multi-touchdown games, didn't seem to show up. Is it time to start looking at John Harbaugh maybe just a little bit?
That's a good question. I mean, I've never even thought about that. Like, when you think about John Harbaugh, you just think about how consistent he is and how, you know, there's coaches that bring their teams to the playoffs every year, like Mike Tomlin, and then they do nothing, you know. But John Harbaugh has actually won a Super Bowl. Like, they don't always get it done in the playoffs, but they can get a win every year almost, you know. So I don't know. It would be interesting maybe to look into that. But I want, like, what about their offensive coordinator? Like, who's calling the plays out?
But again, it's another new one. They've already made that change. I think that I can't even remember their first OC, but I believe this is now their third OC in Baltimore. And they're all trying to run similar systems, obviously, to maximize Lamar's ability, you know, play calling in that game aside. But it doesn't matter. The playoff, the results are the same time. It feels like it's the offense specifically that underperforms with Baltimore. There's no way you cruise through the regular season like they did. We saw them crush both of our teams.
Yeah.
By nearly 50 points combined.
And then they couldn't score.
And they couldn't even break 10 in the playoffs.
But is that more credit than to the Chiefs defense, who have been making offenses look like nothing, like,
17 total points allowed thus far in the playoffs.
That's crazy,
man. Like, you know, just an outside thing here. We'd all done a playoff bracket before the playoff starts, our group here, our friend group here in Montreal. I don't think any of us thought the Chiefs were the ones going to be in that final game.
No, literally just based off of the regular season, like you said. But big players step up in the playoffs, and veteran players, players with experience, know what you got to do. But it's definitely interesting to see the run that they're going on. I wouldn't be surprised if they win the Super Bowl.
I was going to say, at this point now, they have to be the favorites, don't they?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know if they're the favorites. But, I mean, yeah, once again, I can't say anything, because even if I say they're not the favorites, we've been saying that the whole
playoff. The whole playoff. I mean, you and I both thought the Dolphins had a good chance to win that game.
Yeah, I did not, I'll be honest.
Okay, I understand.
We were going to lose.
I don't know. I was behind them. I'd have rather. But anyway, I heard there was also another game in the other conference. The Detroit Lions played against the San Francisco 49ers in one of the most heartbreaking games I've ever watched. From your perspective, obviously I'm way too close to it, what do you think went wrong in that second half?
Everything. Everything went wrong for both the offense, the defense, the coaches. They had a 17-point lead at halftime. They looked like the best team in the NFL in the playoffs by far. Like, the way they were playing in the first half, they were unstoppable. Like, they were running the ball up and down the field like it was nothing. Jared Goff was playing amazing. He played amazing still in the second half.
Super impressed by him.
But then they just fell apart. San Francisco sticked with their game. They, you know, there's that video of George Kittle telling Brock Purdy, "You're that guy, just keep slinging it." that's what they did. They just kept playing their game. And Detroit, I know you hate to hear it, but they crumbled. They crumbled. I don't know if it was a pressure thing. I don't know if it was just like San Francisco putting pressure on them, but it was a combination of a lot of things. I don't know if you want to get into it.
If you want. You know, Detroit Radio did something I thought was very interesting after the game. They did percentage of blame. So they let callers call up and put the percentage of blame on various people, whether it be Dan Campbell, whether it be, you could even go as deep as the roster construction, but it was mostly Campbell, the players, and the play calling. And the only rule was you're never allowed to give 100% to anyone. Obviously, we know that's not how football works. But I was thinking about it from that segment, and for me, it's 100%. It's of the 100, of this 100% pot, 80% fell on the players. I really felt Campbell and even Aaron Glenn put players in position to succeed. You saw Josh Reynolds on that fourth down have an opportunity to make the catch. You saw on those fourth down attempts how behind it the players were. And I understand the second one, you can argue, should they have kicked, should they have not kicked. It's the way they played all year, attacking it on fourth down. I really think this was a failure by the players, and not because they weren't prepared. You cannot open a playoff game 24/7 and tell me they weren't prepared. It's the fact, the gravity of the moment got to them in that second half. And like you had said, San Francisco had been there before. They were used to this situation. They had that calm, like what Kittle was saying to the quarterback, calm down. We've been here before. You're that guy. We can make this. And Detroit just couldn't rally. They had Goff, steadying presence, someone who had been there before, but I don't really feel like there's anyone else on the roster who could calm everybody down.
Yeah, and you guys, unfortunately, were not as lucky either in the second half. Like, there's a couple plays that would have almost never happened, like that missed interception turned to a touchdown. Like, the odds of that happening are really high, you know? And then even Jahmyr Gibbs fumbling the ball. How many times has he fumbled this year? Like, he's not...
I could count him on one hand.
Not leading the NFL in fumbling. Just, like, the way in which it happened, it was, like, one thing after another was going wrong, and... That's why I thought, like you just said, the coaching was good because that's the way you guys coach the whole game. So you don't mind getting that call, like going for it on both fourth downs. But I just thought the way that the momentum was shifting in San Francisco's favor, that last fourth down call was like, you need to kick that field goal. And you know what? Dan Campbell will learn from that. We just saw Ben Johnson staying in Detroit for another season. Everybody thought he was going to leave. So they clearly want to run it back.
Massive, massive victory. Like, I was so down in the dumps after the loss. That was the one thing that gave me a slimmer hope. I've always loved his play calling. Even in that second half that went sideways, I still felt he put the guys in a really good position. Maybe got away from the run a bit too much. You saw Gibbs in that first half, even on third and tens, carving it out, carving it up to the outside. Kind of got away from that maybe a bit much, but beyond that, I think he puts our guys in the best position, and getting him back just opens it up to have another run. What an excellent season, though. Like, I can't say enough about the team up and down. It's just a weird, really weird feeling, though, to want to enjoy that season that just happened. But at the same time, we had this terrible loss, and it's done.
Yeah, would you rather have had the first overall pick or have a loss like that in the conference championship?
I'd have to go with the loss in the conference championship just because I've had way too many first overall picks in my lifetime. How about you, though? As someone whose team wasn't in the game, what's your pick on that one?
On the Lions game?
Like, no. Let's say it was your team in it, hypothetically.
Oh, no, I've been voting for the Miami Dolphins my entire life, and I haven't even been close to seeing a playoff game. Actually, except last year, we almost won. We didn't have our QB, so I would do anything to make it to the conference championship. I don't care if we are up 31-0, and maybe I'll care a little bit at that point. But
yeah, it stings, trust me.
I'd rather be in that position because at least I know that I made it that far, you know? Like, right now my team is a laugh, is a joke. It's a laughing stock. So your team is respected, you know?
Right.
Maybe people are gonna be mad at the last fourth down call, and they're going to say you guys choked or whatever. But after a couple of weeks, they're going to look at the season you had and see how much – better your coach has made this
team. How
much
progress we made. Exactly. Yeah. The coach and GM have changed the entire organization.
Yeah.
But not to focus too much on Lions. Going forward, What are some of your keys to the, I know it's a couple weeks away, and we'll break it down in more detail next week. What are some of your keys for the Super Bowl matchup? What are you watching for?
I want to see how Christian McCaffrey is going to play. I feel like he's been decent during the playoffs, but I kind of feel like he's banged up a bit. I want to see if he's going to be fully healthy. And I want to see what San Francisco's defense is going to do to stop Patrick Mahomes, because right now he's making his wide receivers, who have been what we thought to be mid all season, they're looking like Hall of Famers right now.
Especially Rice, extremely impressed by him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard not to be good when the balls are being thrown perfectly in your hands. Although, hey, they struggled with that earlier in the year. For me, it's Purdy versus that Chiefs defense. That Chiefs defense, extremely impressive. As we said, 17 total points allowed for two games against two of the best offenses in the entire NFL. And a quarterback who spent half the game struggling in Brock Purdy and half the game where the Lions couldn't stop him. I'm very interested to see how San Francisco's offense does. And also interested to see someone whose career I've followed and really admired from afar, Kyle Shanahan, does in another big game. We saw him in a Super Bowl against the Chiefs before choke away a 10-point lead. Mm-hmm. Will something like that happen again?
It'll be interesting to see if he learns from that. I'm really excited to see Taylor Swift on the TV, aren't you?
Oh, it's terrible, isn't it? I know this is, you know, at this point we're receiving more hate for this take than her being on the actual TV. But for us as longtime football fans, we want the focus to be on the game.
Yes.
That's always our issue. There's no problem that she's coming to games, or the fact that more people are getting into the games because of her. That's great. Yeah. That means the game's growing. But the fact you're taking away the focus from the field to focus on her, as diehard football fans, that's just extremely frustrating to see.
Like, if you want to show her one time in the booth and be like, oh, there's a family from Kelsey and his girlfriend, like, okay, that's cool. But the fact that you show it like every time there's a
first, and the comments, the announcers making the comments, bringing up during the game, either sly comments or they'll just straight up say it. What? Keep the focus on the football. That's
for sure.
Oh my goodness. Gonna move right past that segment before we both start getting frustrated. Something else that happened recently: a lot of head coaching hires. Curious if any stood out to you, Dylan.
I know everybody was expecting Harbaugh from Michigan to get a job right away and all that, but I kind of find it interesting how you just won a championship at an NCAA school, and like, how are you directly going back into the NFL? Like, that's going to be a huge challenge.
I can answer that one for you, why he did it. He's not allowed to coach next year. Sorry to break it to Michigan fans. If he were to have stayed, that was a season-long suspension waiting to happen.
Yeah, do you really think the NCAA told him, like, listen, we don't want to make it that public, but you can't come back to Michigan?
I do.
Yeah.
Or at least someone at Michigan was told that, like, hey, if he is back, he's not going to be allowed to coach.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I'm still surprised that he got hired so quick. Like, we still got Bill Belichick out there that obviously maybe this generation of players doesn't want to play for a guy like that, but he's still got, like, all the accolades, you know. Got Mike Vrabel, who's been
I was going to say, well, that was my big shocker. I love the way Mike Vrabel coached that Titans team. Even this year was such a weak roster, yeah. Still had them competing. You saw the shocker on Monday night.
Yeah, he did have them competing. And he people forget, like, he just won Coach of the Year like 2 years ago, you know? He brought a team with Ryan Tannehill to the conference championship. They almost went to the Super Bowl.
Exactly. How was that man not hired in this cycle? I understand the appeal of, like, for Seattle, a new, young, after having an older coach, a new, young defensive mind going with, like, Mike McDonald. But for some of these other teams, like the Falcons, who went and got a retread coach who had failed before, why weren't they looking more at Mike Vrabel?
I don't know. I don't know what's happening with Vrabel. Maybe there's something we don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to coach this year. Maybe he wants to take a year off. Maybe same thing for Bill. But it's very interesting to me that he hasn't even had – I haven't even been seeing reports of teams interviewing him.
No, like with Bill, we saw the Falcons situation where he was getting interviewed. It felt like pretty consistently. Felt like he was going to get that job, to be honest. But like you said, Vrabel – you saw nothing.
He's got to, like, be telling teams he's not interested right now or something. Because also, if you watch some of the Titans game this year, this man looked depressed on the sidelines every game.
But he had no players. I mean, yeah. Excuse me, you can't blame a coach for that. Like, at some point, it must wear on you.
No, I'm not blaming him, but I'm just saying, like, maybe, like you just said, it did wear on him, and now he's like, I need to evaluate my... Or maybe he knows that he'll coach again, but he just wants to take a year off and see what opens up next year. Maybe a better team will open up to him next year, because right now, who's left? There's nobody. There's no head coaching.
No, they're filled. Yeah, so it's over. They're now. All filled. It's done.
So then he has to wait till next year now.
Another shocker you had actually brought up a couple minutes ago was the Ben Johnson thing. I thought he was gone for sure.
Yeah, everybody thought he was gone. He's such a good offensive mind.
I was going to say, a young, bright offensive mind.
You don't see that anymore in the NFL where they resign. But that I think that shows how much an influence Dan Campbell must have on his guys and how much of a motivator this guy is. He definitely told him, like, listen, we got to come back.
One more year, rally the troops, let's go get it. Yeah. And, no, it was funny. St. Brown on his podcast had said Johnson called him at like 3 or 4 in the morning, said he couldn't sleep and said he wanted to run it back. So whatever culture's going on there is working. But for these teams, one of the reports I had come across was that Johnson's asking price was too high. If a bright young offensive coordinator is even considering your job, there is no too high asking price. Like, I couldn't believe that, especially on the Commander's end, where you haven't seen to have a lot of direction. You have a guy coming from a coaching tree under Dan Campbell where he's instilled direction in a franchise that was terrible before. How is that not your home run hire?
Well, maybe I think I'm sure they shot him with loads of bags of money, you know, like they definitely sent him his way. But maybe, like you just said, a cultural aspect, the Commanders, I know they have new ownership and all that now, and I think they're turning it around. But in the last, like, 20, 30 years, they've had one of the worst cultures in all the NFL. The stadium is way out in the middle of nowhere, and, like, it's not even in Washington, D.C. It's old. Like, you've seen videos of that stadium crumbling on Jalen Hurts, you know?
I've seen other videos of stuff falling through the rafters.
Yeah, exactly. They have no, like, I don't know when are they even close to being a playoff team? I don't think so. They got to do full rebuild. They just traded away Chase Young, who was supposed to be the start of their rebuild. So, like, Ben Johnson probably saw it, and he's like, I don't care about the money at this point. Like,
but you don't even care about the number 2 pick?
I mean, I don't know. If I'm Ben Johnson, it's the first time I bring a fan base like the Lions fan base all the way to the conference championships. And I want to see it through, you know? Like, I want to give it at least one more shot. Like, he's getting paid a good amount anyways. You know?
Top,
like,
paid coordinator in the league.
Yeah, there you go.
And he's expected to get another raise. So, he's not hurting in the pocketbook. But that's the goal of these guys, to reach that. To reach that pinnacle. That's the pinnacle of the profession. Head coach in the NFL, that is the top. Mm-hmm. And these, we've seen before, hot coaching names. Like, I don't know if you remember, when the Bucs were making their runs there with Tom Brady, Byron Leftwich was a hot name. Didn't take the jobs or didn't get the jobs, and then he was fired as the OC a couple years later.
That's true, if you think about it that way. I guess Ben Johnson just has enough confidence in his head coach and his players that they'll make him look good again next year, you know?
Favorite and least favorite hire of the cycle?
That's a good question.
I'll
tell you my least favorite hire. It's not a head coach. It's an offense coordinator. Arthur Smith to Pittsburgh.
That's who they picked. I didn't even know that.
I'm pretty sure it was confirmed. I hate that hire because I think he did an awful job with the offense he had in Atlanta. It's not like I know they were a young team, but it's not like he didn't have any offensive playmakers. Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, who we don't even know what's going on with this guy's career. The quarterback situation was, you know, under average.
Yeah, I can't blame him too much for that part of it. But
even Drake London, wide receiver, like, they got some talent. I just thought he was awful, and now Pittsburgh decides this is going to be the guy to lead, like, Kenny Pickett to the playoffs. Like, I don't know.
That's an underrated storyline going into next year. Tomlin's hiring has been terrible. You saw the OC last year, Matt Canada. I don't even know how he lasted half the year with the way that offense looked. But it's also a personnel thing, thinking back to Pittsburgh. I mean, not that it seems to matter with Arthur Smith giving Bijan Robinson 2 carries every game. You have this star young running back, and he's just not utilizing him. Like you say, Drake London, no catches. Kyle Pitts, you'd forget he was out there. But I don't know, the mix of offensive talent and offensive line play on Pittsburgh combined with the mediocre quarterback play, I mean, that might have been the only guy who was willing to take the job.
Yeah, maybe that's why they hired him. What do you think of Seahawks hire of Mike McDonald? I don't know much about
That was the thing. So coming from Michigan, worked under Harbaugh, I like a young head coach in that situation. My only issue, and this is not to put down that hire, I still like the hire, I always prefer a guy from the offensive side of the ball. We're in a very offensive league right now. I think going defensive is a risk. These guys tend to be more conservative, and these guys don't have as much time to go and call the defense. You can't automatically assume, oh, Seattle's defense is going to be better because we have this bright young defensive mind. Well, oftentimes what happens is these guys come in, realize they don't have as much time to focus on the defense, and the defense actually slips. Did they go the wrong direction with the hire? No. But that's a team, again, not to keep beating on the same drum, that would have been a perfect Vrabel team. Yeah. An older roster, ready to win now, who does have a bit of playoff experience, even though they lost the previous year, has been in some big must-win games. I'd have liked to see something like that. Another hire that I was left scratching my head, especially after his performance late in the year, the Commanders and Dan Quinn. I don't get it.
Well, I was going to – before, if you take away that playoff game, I wanted Dan Quinn to be the replacement in Seattle. Like, he was there during the Super Bowl years. Their Cowboys defense was pretty solid all season. And then, like, total collapse in the playoffs again. So now I don't really know what to think of the hire. Like, did they just put that game behind them and say, let's just look at the regular season? Maybe.
But, yeah, how many playoff collapses are you allowed, especially ones against the Packers where receivers are running wide open?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not good. And he also had another collapse that everybody remembers.
Oh, that Super Bowl. Right, the Super Bowl one.
So, like you just said, how many collapses are you allowed before you don't get a job anymore? I guess we'll see what he can do.
Yeah, apparently he's under that number. He's right under that sweet spot, but one more and then he's in trouble, apparently.
Literally.
What do you think about what's going on in Philadelphia?
I am very confused as to what's going on in Philadelphia. Like, when they played the Dolphins in the middle of the season, they looked like a Super Bowl team.
Oh, a lock. They looked like,
you know, until after they beat the Chiefs, they looked like a Super Bowl team, and then they completely collapsed. That's got to be coaches, right? Like, they have all the talent on the field. Unless there's some beef in the locker room between some players that we don't know about, I don't know what they're going to do. Apparently, they're staying with Sirianni, right? So
they are, but the coordinator hires even. He brought in Kellen Moore.
And they brought in Vic Fangio
on defense, right.
Yeah.
One coordinator who basically quit on the team he was currently coaching, and Kellen Moore, whose offenses have fallen apart the last 2-3 years.
Yeah.
He's coming from the Chargers.
Never been a big Kellen Moore.
No. And
not in the NFL, at least.
Oh, loved him at Boise when he was quarterback, though. I don't know. I don't know if you saw any of that.
No, I remember. And then he coached Texas A&M also. No, he was the coordinator there.
And then, well, actually, funny, he was the backup in Detroit a couple of years, not to go too deep dive really? Into the Kellen Moore career arc. But yeah, I felt like that was maybe, but again, maybe that's why these top-tier coaches, Belichick and Vrabel, are waiting. That seems to me like a guaranteed potential opening next year if things don't improve.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the next season, because when you got Vrabel and Belichick out there with no jobs, like, it's kind of a big question mark over the NFL.
Another hire that, I immediately messaged one of our friends who's a big Falcons guy about, really, really was not a big fan of, was the Raheem Morris hire in Atlanta. Really flaked out as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach. Didn't see too much. Team didn't win very much. I understand he's a very good coordinator, but hiring someone who had such a poor stint as a head coach the first time reminds me a lot of Josh McDaniels. Always has the poor head coaching stints. The next team decides, oh, well, we're going to hire him. He might have learned, and it just ends badly again. I'm curious, only a minute left here up against it, but curious what you think of the Atlanta hire.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the players react to it, because I think Jalen Ramsey came out and publicly stated that he loved the hire, and when he played under him when he was his DC, like, got the most out of him and all that. And he said something like different people react differently to different situations, so maybe this will be the right situation for that head coach. I guess we'll have to see.
Wouldn't mind if it isn't right away. Need a big year for the Lions in the NFC. For sure. That's a tough thing in the NFC. Seeing all these new coaches, what if one of them pops?
Yeah.
It's just in the back of my mind the whole time. Going to run a few ads here, and then to finish off the show, we're going to do some NBA. Thanks for listening.
I'm Romano Mercadante, host of the ABCs. Join me Tuesdays at 3 o'clock to hear me interview local bands around Montreal, give you the latest scoop on upcoming performances on the island, hear in-depth topic pieces on forces affecting the music industry, and of course, hear some great alternative rock music. If you ever want to listen, learn, or laugh, make sure to tune in to the ABCs, only on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
Pansy, Annie, bonjour, hello. This is composer Andrew Balfour inviting you to experience Isfachiwin, a musical journey bridging cultures and perspectives. It is both a personal journey and evocative testament to the transformative power of music. This recording features Calgary's luminous voices with the incredible Jessica McMahon and Walter McDonald Whitebear on flutes. It is my hope that this album deepens our understanding of Indigenous storytelling. Isfachiwin is available now wherever you listen to music.
Welcome back to our last segment here on the Starting Rotation podcast. Jacob Snyder here with Dylan Adams. All right, Dylan, last sport on the docket today, the NBA. What I wanted to start with in the NBA are two teams specifically, Oklahoma City and Minnesota. Two teams that have never been at the top of these conferences this late in the year and are here. Well, sorry, I take that back. OKC, forgetting a bit about the success during the Durant-Westbrook-Harden era. But it's been a while for them. Can they maintain that success?
If they're healthy, yes. I think we all knew OKC was going to be good in the next couple of years because of the enormous amount of draft picks they have. But I don't think anybody thought they would be top two in the West like this season. Like, they're playing at an incredibly high level, and it's all with guys that are like 25 and under. Like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is in the MVP conversation right now. He's got Chet Holmgren down low, who is a rookie because he was injured all of last season. Even the two Williams guys, they're playing great. They got Lou Dort from right here, from Montreal, playing great defense. Like, if they stay healthy, they can succeed in the playoffs, but they don't have any playoff experience, barely. So who will they play in the first round? Who will they play in the second round? That's going to be very important. Coaching also, if they play against, like, the Nuggets, like, they might get out coached just because the Nuggets just went to the finals, you know, like, it's gonna be interesting.
I was going to say, based on that roster construction, the one thing, like you said, youth holding them back. I also think they're short of center. Wouldn't mind someone else adding a big body in there to help Chet out. But that youth in playoffs always seems to kind of come up a bit shorter than the expectations would suggest. I actually wouldn't be surprised if they didn't even make the conference finals.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, at the same time, maybe Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to show that, like, he's really that guy. We've had some young players in the past, like, you know, Dwayne Wade in the finals in 2006. It was his third season, and he's averaged 35 points a game in the finals to show the world that, like, he was really that guy. And maybe this will be one of those instances as well. But until I see it, I can't really confirm that OKC is going to win the championship.
I'm so glad you brought up that example, though, because you know who reminds me of that in the same situation? Anthony Edwards in Minnesota. It really feels like he's coming on, ready to take over the league.
He's looking like Michael Jordan out there.
He does. When you watch games, he is far and away the best player on the court, and he's got the right mentality. One of the things I love about his game, it's so downhill and attacking. He's never met a shot he doesn't like. His teammates really seem to gravitate towards him, be okay with kicking him the ball. Like, even guys like Cat, who have been in the league a while, who have been a bit more established just because they have more years under the belt, are deferring to Edwards. It's been really cool to see a young player like him blossom. For them, it's been so shocking to see after the dysfunction of the past seasons, the exit they had. There were rumors that Rudy Gobert was going to be moved.
Yeah, like, Anthony Edwards is playing at such a high level that sometimes I completely forget that Karl-Anthony Towns is part of this team. Like, Edwards is averaging 25.5. Gobert is having a great season also. Nobody's talking about his
out of nowhere after year, you know? The way he looked last
year. This is another team just like even if I had to pick between OKC and Minnesota and last year and you told me one of these teams is going to go off next year, I would have said, okay, OKC.
Right.
Minnesota, I had no clue they would be first. And it's not like they're first in the first week of the season. It's been like we're midway through the season.
We're almost at All-Star break. And the fact they're still in pole position, I think that could be the team. They're a bit older. Gobert's had a lot of playoff minutes. They're starting center. They've had a lot of playoff experience, although it's usually getting bounced in the first round. They took the Nuggets last year to six games, the eventual champion. Chris Finch, a very bright coach. I could see that being the team that maybe breaks out and makes a run.
Like, if you would have told me that in the Northwest Division in the West, so Northwest Division in the West, you got Minnesota, Oklahoma City, Denver, Utah, and Portland. Last year in the summer, if you would have told me Denver is going to be third in that division, I would have said you're crazy.
Still playing well. Not third because, all these guys are out.
33-16, and they're third in the division, but it just happens to be the same division as OKC and Minnesota. It's ridiculous.
Philly playoffs are going to be very exciting. One thing, though, not to look too far ahead to playoffs, the regular season. A point of frustration you and I keep going over with one another is the fact these stars are sitting out games still, regardless of the awards now having a minimum number of games you got to play. It takes away so much from the game. You see a big matchup on the docket and Embiid's up. Or last night, OKC, Denver Nuggets, huge game. Jokic has a back injury. Is it hurting your enjoyment as a fan?
Absolutely. I remember when I was a kid and it's like Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m., you turn on ABC, ESPN, you got the biggest game of the week, you know, like Knicks, Lakers, and it was Kobe versus Carmelo, you know, all that stuff. Now, like, all these primetime NBA games, like, you're guaranteed to have a guy sitting out regardless of the rule this year. It's really annoying. And, like, I get that Joel Embiid is, like, 7-foot-something. He's huge. He's going to get hurt. But the guy has not played in Denver since 2019. You're telling me that that's normal? It's not normal. It completely takes away from the game. That's why we found ourselves talking about college basketball more, because like the NBA regular season, I feel like it gets very boring. You got guys popping off for 70 points on a Wednesday night, like it's nothing. Like what is going on in the league right now?
But against the 10-40 Portland Trailblazers, and the next night against, like you say, like a team like Denver or something, where it is important to see how you match up, they're out. A team that's been terrible for that this year. I don't know if you followed Phoenix too closely. It seems like every single game, one of the three stars is hurt. It took about 30 games in until all three played a game together. Do you think they have a shot?
Well, if they're healthy, they definitely have a shot. But, like, will they be healthy? And will they play enough games together to get that chemistry before the playoffs? Because now, like, regardless if you have a big three or not, like, I think fans are starting not to care about that. We've seen it with the Nets where they had these big threes that collapsed. We've seen it with, like, other teams as well, you know. So if you don't play any games together in the regular season, like, you're not going to play well in the playoffs.
No, in those clutch moments where you do have to rely on that chemistry,
yeah.
You're asking to make a mistake pass where someone's not going to be. And then all of a sudden, you have this massive payroll, Beal, Booker, KD, and you're out in the second round. What good has it done you? Whereas a team like the Nuggets, who have that continuity, or the Timberwolves, or the Thunder, who most nights all their guys are playing, will have such an advantage over the Suns team. The Phoenix Suns have to be my biggest disappointment this far.
You know, that could also come down a bit to, like, ownership, you know? Ownership, Phoenix Suns, they get these big names, Durant, Beal. You know, well, Booker's, they drafted him. He's been there a while. But they try to get, even when they got Chris Paul, they try to get these big names. It brings in a lot of money, brings in a lot of fans. They have a decent season, but they don't win. You know, yeah, they went to the finals, I know, but they don't win. Compare that to Oklahoma City, who's, I don't know when's the last time they signed a big free agent. Like, it's been,
they have no draw.
In OKC, but right. They're like drafting like crazy, you know. Minnesota also, they don't sign huge free agents. They drafted Anthony Edwards
and Towns. Yep,
they're top two in the conference. It's like a different level of competition. They're more dangerous than Phoenix in the playoffs,
which is wild to think about.
before the season? Like, could would you have ever thought this big three in Phoenix, and we're talking about Minnesota Timberwolves?
No, like, I mean, well, now I'm, like I said, I'm starting to get used to it at this point. But yes. A couple of years ago, I would have been, like, shook if Phoenix wasn't number one. But now, like, at this point, I'm not surprised anymore. I want to ask you about another team that's been really performing, but people are not talking about as much. The Clippers, ever since they got James Harden, like, they're third in the West right now. What do you think? What's their ceiling?
First off, I actually thought you were going a different direction with that. I was expecting to hear a Knicks question, but he's shaking his head over here. Big rivalry with Miami. But the Clippers, again, very surprised. When I didn't like the Harden trade, I thought they would have been better off exploring more depth options.
And they went 0-5 when they traded
him. And they went 0-5 immediately after getting him. And then Westbrook, like you had mentioned before, being moved to the bench completely ignited that squad. Everybody seems to be staying healthy. I mean, knock on wood, give it a month and George and Kawhi both will be out. But the chemistry on offense and defense, extremely impressive. They now have great spacing and a guy in Kawhi Leonard who can always guard the other team's best players and slow him down.
He's also averaging 24 a game, so he's
also averaging 24 on the offensive end.
1.7 steals.
And George, low 20 scorer, again, long, lanky wing. On paper, that team could make a deep run. It's just I worry about Harden in the playoffs. I worry about this team with injuries. Am I completely shocked and impressed by this massive run they've been having? Of course. But I really do not think it's sustainable.
I usually would agree with saying that I'm worried about Harden in the playoffs, but this year, like, his role is different. They're not asking him to score the ball. He's fifth in the NBA in assists with 8.5 a game. I really think it's going to be about Paul George and Kawhi scoring in the playoffs. Kawhi, I'm not worried about him scoring in the playoffs.
No, but Paul George.
Paul George, I would be worried, unless he starts playing like Indiana Pacers Paul George.
Oh, wasn't that amazing when he duel with LeBron and they both have like 30, 40 points?
Yes, because Miami would win.
Yes, Miami would win, but Paul George would just absolutely show out.
Yeah, he would.
Real quick, before we're up against here, about 3 minutes left, I know there were a few other big sporty events this weekend you wanted to bring some light to.
Yeah, so a couple things happening this weekend. If you're into rugby, Six Nations tournament is kicking off. France is playing Ireland. France just lost, devastated loss in the World Cup, which they hosted at home. They'll be playing Ireland on Friday. Huge game. College basketball this weekend. I know we just ripped on the NBA for being boring in the season. College ball is the complete opposite. The season has been on fire.
We just watched an electric game last night, Florida-Kentucky.
Yeah, it was a great game that went to overtime. This weekend, we got Duke versus North Carolina, which is one of the biggest rivalries in the history of basketball. That'll be a good game. There's a bunch of other good games. There's Tennessee's playing also. A lot of good games. Also, in other news, Lewis Hamilton was announced this morning. He will be moving to Ferrari in 2025.
That's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. He's been at Mercedes for I don't know how long, so I don't know who's going to be moving out of Ferrari, because right now they got Leclerc and Carlos Sainz. Sorry, I had a blank there. So I don't know who's going to be kicked out of them, but that'll be interesting to see. F1 starts at the end of the month. Back on already. It's crazy.
Isn't it shocking he moved, though?
Yeah.
I mean, it really felt like him and Mercedes were lockstep.
Maybe I have to read more into it. I just found out the news before we went on air, but maybe it's a question of his age and Mercedes wants to move on. I have no idea, but definitely big news in Formula One.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, not to dive too deep into it, but I went to the last Formula One here in Montreal. It really felt like they had made Lewis Hamilton the face of the Mercedes racing brand.
Yeah,
you couldn't go anywhere without seeing a Mercedes poster and his face on it, even more so than other drivers, like, you know, except for Verstappen, obviously, but he was winning every race. Of course, he'll be everywhere. That's a shocker. But yeah, if you can, everybody out there, definitely get in front of your TVs. Watch a little college ball this weekend, or this week even. I know that's what we're going to be doing, and can't thank everybody enough out there for listening. Going forward, I can't tell you who's going to be on the mics, but looks like the starting rotation's back. Thanks a ton for listening. Have a good week.
Starling swarms will soon.